Deep in the Mississippi Delta, Laura Lee Wallace, or Lali as she's called, lives in a trailer raising three of her 50 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. In this West Tallahatchie community where black townspeople rely on the cotton fields for work, Lali has spent her life since the age of six picking cotton. Today, at 62 years old, she lives on a disability check, and life is a struggle. Lali's trailer has no running water. For baths, the youngest children stand in buckets while a cousin pours jugs of water over them. Every so often, Lali loads up her car with empty plastic bottles and heads for the county jailhouse, where she fills them with water from a hose.
It won't be no problem for me getting some water from the county. We all pay tax, so I go to the county, go to the jailhouse and get it.
Lali's Kin, The Legacy of Cotton, is one of five documentary features nominated for an Academy Award this year. Today, we begin the first in our series of interviews with the filmmakers who made each of the five documentary features. This week, Susan Fromke and Albert Maisels join us from the NPR Bureau in New York. Fromke produced and directed Lali's Kin. Maisels, who won an award for Best Cinematography at the Sundance Film Festival last year, shot the movie. Hello, Susan and Albert. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Hi there.
So tell us about Lali.
Lali, when we met her, she was 60 years old, from a family of 23 children. She had 12 children of her own, 35 grandchildren, and 15 great-grandchildren. And none of the guys had to be seen.
So where were the men?
Lots of them in jail. In fact, at one moment you see that the new building that is going up in town is not a high school or a grammar school. It's the new prison.
Well, we meet a lot of children in and out of the film as it progresses, but the three main children are Gregory, whose nickname is Redman. He's a lively kid, and we see him as he starts kindergarten. He's excited to do that. There's also a child named Antonio, and his nickname is Maine, but he's very withdrawn. And then there's Cassandra, whose nickname is Granny. She's 12 years old. She really likes school, but she's so overworked trying to help out at home with Lali. Now, how did you come to focus on these particular three children out of all the ones who come in and out of Lali's trailer?
When we first met the kids, the first year, they're very young, and they're just as bright and curious as every child we'd ever met. But a few years later, what we started to see is that these kids are really being programmed for poverty. You know, the little boys really expect to go to jail. And in fact, they say it, they'd rather go to jail than school.
With the best of intentions, they just can't get anywhere. That's at home where the kids are brought up without training and skills of reading and that are going to make them good students. And then they come to school, and Reggie's major efforts have to be spent on keeping the school out of probation, which means that everybody has to concentrate on getting better test scores, which doesn't help them actually in getting a better education.
Actually, let's listen to a scene involving Reggie Barnes, who is the superintendent of schools in West Tallahatchie, and this is where he's trying to explain what's going on, why the state is threatening to take over, and how difficult it is for him to try to turn this school around, given the incredible odds against him.
We get kids in kindergarten who don't know their names. We get kids in kindergarten who don't know colors. We get kids in kindergarten who've never been read to. If we can educate the children of the illiterate parent, we stop the vicious cycle. We stop the teenage pregnancies. We stop the use of drugs. We stop the thugs that people label these kids as who walk the street and break in people's houses. We begin to lessen the number of black kids who go 16 miles from here to the state penitentiary, where more and more facilities are being furnished for that than classrooms. You know, it takes about $30,000 a year to house and feed one inmate. Give me 2% of that $30,000, let me educate him.
That's Reggie Barnes, the superintendent of schools in West Tallahatchie County. I must say, what he brings to this movie, I mean, so many of these things are statistics that we become inured to. We just get used to hearing people are poor, there's illiteracy, it's a cycle of poverty, it can't break. But then when he says, he gets kids who don't know their names and can't even distinguish colors. They don't know the names of colors. It really is like, I don't know, to me it was like a punch in the gut to realize that this is what's going on.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that what was interesting is that Reggie and a lot of the town leaders in that area wanted us to come and film their situation because they wanted people in America to see that this is a third world country in the Mississippi Delta.
What tears at your heart is that you know the kids aren't dumb. You know that with the proper environment and the proper kind of schooling, that these kids could be living successful lives. But it ain't going to happen.
And if Reggie can't pull the school system off probation, he can't get the funding to bring in certified teachers. And so it's this catch-22 that he's living. And I do think that what you see in the film, and I think what's the power of the film, is that you're really living the life of poverty and realizing that, you know, a lot of people have these misconceptions that, well, why don't you learn to read or things like that? It's not that easy when you're growing up in an illiterate household that doesn't even have electricity so that you can study in the evening.
In fact, you subtitle this movie The Legacy of Cotton, so you must see a direct connection between the illiteracy and the way the schools are and the legacy of cotton.
We do. We feel that, as Reggie explains and as Lali, you know, it was hard to get Lali to talk about being in the cotton field because there's still this fear of the boss man, that if you say something out of place, the boss man can find you. And, you know, I mean, this is the population that where there was lots of lynchings in the 40s and 50s and up to the 60s, from what I understand. So there's still this kind of plantation mentality and psychological fear that still kind of hovers over the area. But as Reggie explains, during cotton season, all the cotton pickers had to, you know, all the kids of the cotton pickers had to leave school. So at most they might get like 2 or 3 months of schooling. But even then, there was a tradition as well of keeping this population illiterate so that they could not read. And he's told us about times, this was probably in the 40s, 30s, and 40s, where if some of the cotton pickers actually had books, you know, that could be cause to be lynched. And so this plantation mentality, what you see is now 3 generations later, where it still is all pervasive in the mentality that people don't even understand why it is so important to get the education or how you get the education. They'll give lip service to it, but they don't really understand it.
Well, one person who understands it is the 12-year-old called Granny, who wants to go to school, and there's this heartbreaking scene where she's sitting there sullen and sad, and Lali says, "What are you doing here? Why aren't you in school today?" And it's because she has no pencils or paper. She can't afford pencils and paper. And we can hear a little bit of that scene now.
What your mama tell you?
She didn't tell me nothing.
Well, what you said about this morning about school? Huh?
Said we ain't had no paper and pencils.
Well, you want to go to school tomorrow?
Yeah.
Well, I see two of y'all trying to go to school tomorrow, huh? Yeah?
Yeah.
I got some nickels and pennies and I can give y'all to try to get some paper. That's all Mama can do.
So Lali's going to scrounge around for some nickels and pennies in her purse to try to be, and some pencils around the house somewhere, so that Granny can go to school the next day. Now, again, this is one of those lightning scenes that really illuminate so much. But you guys were standing there. Surely you had pencils and paper in your pockets.
Well, you know, as a filmmaker, if we had given, you know, Lali the paper and pencils for the kids to go to school, we would have been changing their reality, and we would not have been able to capture the scale of the poverty that we're dealing with in America, in this area. And so you have to really, really restrain yourself from getting involved. Otherwise, you really will not get the truth.
At the end of the movie, we find out that the West Tallahatchie schools have gone off probation. They've risen up from a level one school. And so there's a big celebration in the schools with Reggie Barnes and the students. Where are those schools today?
Well, I think that what's really been very beneficial to the school is that it did go up to a level two. And I think that now the state of Mississippi is slightly changing the way that how the schools are accredited. But I do know that Reggie Barnes was able to bring the, I think it's the Jim Barksdale's Foundation, in from the University of Mississippi in Oxford. And I think they got a grant of $100,000 to study illiteracy. And the Bearden Elementary School, largely through Reggie Barnes' efforts, was one of the first recipients of that money. So I think that there's a lot of hope down there now. But there's still a lot more to be done.
Susan Fromke and Albert Maisels, along with Deborah Dixon, they produced the Academy Award-nominated documentary called Lali's Kin, The Legacy of Cotton. It debuts on HBO on May 12th. Next week, we'll talk with filmmaker Edith Belzberg about her documentary, Children Underground. Thank you, Susan and Albert.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.